We're here because we don't buy into the bullshit of mainstream culture. We're tired of the mundane, passionless careers we've been shuffled into as a result of this orchestrated debt-based system of rule, and the stranglehold on education and entertainment by cold, soulless corporations. People, yes, we are frustrated. Yes, we are tired. And we reject the pre-approved tranquilizers that are Monday Night Football and an ice-cold Budweiser. But we have to stop hiding. Stop hiding behind the headphones and the Cherry Popper 420 username. Let the world see that the resistance is strong and society is changing. There was a time to be anonymous, but that time has passed. And so the Higher Side Chats would like to present Conspiracies as the dawning of this new paradigm in the uniform of the revolution. Because bold fashion should mean more than some celebrity meat dresser frat boy in a silly pink polo. Conspiracies redefines bold fashion as having the balls to reject socially uncomfortable and unpopular truths from your radiant chest all fucking day. Conspiracies.net. Let them know that you know. Bold designs for troubled times. Hard truths. Soft cock.
In the 1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of fire. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Higher Side Chats.
Welcome to another fun-filled episode of THC, people. Drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke from sunny San Diego, just trying to cope. And I hope you're managing as well as we watch our fearless leader wave his cock all over the planet. But just a few days from 9/11, the anniversary of the boldest bunch of trauma-inducing bullshit we've seen in our lifetime, I found no better fit than today's guest, also from my happy place here in San Diego. He's written one of the many great books on the tragedy entitled The 9/11 Fear-Based Mind Control Program, as well as the more positively toned book, Deep in the Garden of Consciousness. He's an inspirational lecturer and counselor on many topics, including media manipulation, subliminal messaging, social programming, self-empowerment, the male-female dichotomy, and many other topics we appreciate here on THC. His name is Lennon Honor, and the honor, my friends, is mine. Lennon, welcome to the show, man.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today.
Yeah, man, I'm very excited about this. You've got a lot of great work out there, tons of great videos. There's several things I hope we can touch on, but I think we have to start with what's going on in this world right now. Again, just a few days from 9/11, I'm seeing us try to pull the same script from Iraq, and our Peace Prize-winning president and his puppeteers are trying to duplicate that in Syria. I mean, what's your take on this stuff, man?
Yes. Mass media operates in cycles. So in general, there are themes that are represented over and over again, and this is precisely what's taking place right now in Syria, and it's a replay of Libya, but it also has a relationship to Iraq and going back to September 11, 2001 and the whole propaganda about weapons of mass destruction and Hussein uses biological weapons against his own people. These are scripts. They're basically regurgitated throughout time, and that's precisely what's taking place in Syria.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely seems that way. Obviously, on a show like this, we've talked 9/11 to death. No pun intended, but your 9/11 book focuses on the mass psychological trauma and the injection of fear into the culture. And usually I'm very cynical about how the human race is doing, but I have to say, just in the context of the terrorism meme, I think most Americans have gotten past that. I mean, what do you think?
Yes, I would say this would be the case for the general population to a degree. However, this does not resolve necessarily the subconscious trauma of September 11, 2001. And then also all of the triggering of that trauma, which includes all of the terrorist propaganda. I think since September 11, 2001, more and more people have come to realize that in terms of terrorism, Al-Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, that much of this is just simply propaganda. It's not substantive. It's not backed by evidence or proof that would stand up in a court of law or otherwise. However, in terms of the trauma of the event, that's what I focus on inside of my book in terms of the psychological implications of September 11, 2001. So while we have made progressions, and this is a wonderful thing in terms of, you know, the human species on Earth recognizing all the fear propaganda, terrorism, potential terror threats, unconfirmed, credible but unconfirmed terror threats, et cetera, though we've made progressions with our realization of the propaganda aspect, there is still a need for us to deal with the subconscious trauma of September 11th. And that's what my focus is on in the book. And the reason why is because what mass media does is it functions to trigger that particular trauma. And in triggering that trauma, people tend to kind of get back into a fear mode that was associated with September 11, 2001.
It's really sad because if you look at the terrorists' role in the past 12 years, it's been, at least for us, almost non-existent, but it is what we spend the most amount of money on, with the most amount of time on. The media spends all their time talking about it. And, I mean, give us some of the details on how this type of trauma, this secular trauma, can affect an entire population, maybe some of the less obvious ways.
Yes, yes. And what I talk about inside the book, just looking at it from a psychological standpoint, the event of September 11, 2001 was the most traumatizing event of our time. And this particular trauma, in terms of the interpretation of that trauma, was not processed consciously. Okay, so I think people, they need to understand this dynamic in terms of human psychology. Instead, it was interpreted on a subconscious level. And there were three main reasons why I talk about this inside the book. The first one being sensory overload. Whenever you overload a person's senses, their conscious mind begins to experience a degree of psychological trauma. And then the subconscious mind kicks in, takes that trauma, submerges it within the subconscious mind. It's a defense mechanism. It's what they call, psychologists call, a psychological defense mechanism. Mm-hmm. So on that day, we were bombarded with it's sensory overload, but bombarded with images, video footage, audio, reports, et cetera, on that day. And it was all condensed really within an 8-hour period. After that first 8-hour period, and this also means viewing all the death and destruction and carnage and all the trauma associated with that. After that eight-hour period, there was pretty much a standardized version of events in terms of the official version. Not that it was solidified, but at least it was coming into view. It was all propaganda, too. Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, et cetera, these Muslim terrorists, et cetera. So one of the primary reasons in terms of the event itself, the trauma of the event, and not being processed on a conscious level, was sensory overload. Another one of the primary reasons happened to be conflicting information. And that is to say that whenever we receive conflicting information, our conscious mind experiences a degree of psychological trauma. The subconscious mind kicks in to protect the conscious mind from psychological trauma. The subconscious mind, its main objective is to protect our conscious mind from experiencing degrees of psychological trauma. One of the primary goals of our conscious mind is to define undefined elements and to solve problems. So if you're trying to solve a problem like 911, or you're trying to define an undefined element like 911, September 11, 2001, and you're giving conflicting information, your conscious awareness will become confused and therefore won't be able to define the undefined element or to solve the problem. Therefore, you experience psychological trauma. The subconscious mind kicks in, takes that trauma, submerges within the subconscious mind. That's what I mean by September 11th, as in terms of the trauma of the event, was not consciously processed. It could not be processed consciously. Instead, it was interpreted on a subconscious level. And then the third and most important reason why, as to why our conscious mind could not process the trauma of September 11, 2001, was fear itself. And on that day, September 11, 2001, this particular event was globalized. For the first time in human history, we had a traumatizing event that had global implications that was broadcast to the global population in real time. The first time ever in human history. So in essence, what was being broadcast was the trauma. And this trauma, in terms of the interpretation of this trauma, whenever we're dealing with fear, it stimulated great deals of fear in people. So we had a global population under a state of fear. And whenever we're in a state of fear, it compromises our intellectual processes, which means it compromises our ability to define an undefined element or to solve a problem. And then we experience psychological trauma. The subconscious mind kicks in, takes that trauma, submerges it within the subconscious mind. Now, when I say submerge within the conscious mind, what that means is that we are not consciously aware of it anymore. And in other words, there can be a trauma that we've experienced in our life that has been submerged within the subconscious mind, and it's a psychological defense mechanism so that your conscious mind won't have to think about that trauma. And see, the conscious mind can only think about one thing at a time. The subconscious mind can think about anything. All of our memories can think about many things at any given time. The subconscious mind, all of our memories are stored in our subconscious mind, including the traumas are stored there as well. So the fear of September 11, 2001 that we felt on a global level also compromised the global population's conscious mind's ability to process this particular trauma, and therefore the trauma of September 11 was submerged within the subconscious mind. Now, there's other reasons why it contributed to this, but those are the three primary reasons why this is relevant, and why it's relevant to today, and as we get closer to September 11th, is because this subconscious trauma has gone unresolved in the subconscious mind for the global population. So while consciously people may say, okay, all this terrorist propaganda, you know, this is just propaganda, it's not real, it still does not resolve the trauma in the subconscious mind. And there's a procedure, and I talk about this inside the book in terms of healing that trauma. But what mass media does is it triggers the subconsciously embedded trauma at particular times in the year. Usually within the 6 weeks leading up to September 11th, I have this inside my book on page 97. I write here that within the 6 weeks leading up to the anniversary of September 11, 2001, we find a steady buildup of September 11, 2001 trigger stories in the news. Topics include, number one, terror threats. Okay, so Yemen, okay, in that 6 weeks period, remember all the terrorist threats in Yemen? It's perfectly predictable. Nothing ever pans out. Nothing needs to pan out. It's like you said earlier, you know, there's so much focus on terrorism. But if you think about it here in the United States, when was the last time we had a terrorist attack here? Yeah. Okay, September 11, 2001. And yet every single year within the 6 weeks, we're given these propagandizations of these potential terror threats. They call them credible but unconfirmed terror threats. So we get stories about terror threats, cyber threats. Number two, bomb threats. Okay, breast implant bombs. Okay, body implant bombs, liquid bombs. All this is in the news within the 6 weeks leading up to September 11. This triggers the trauma. Stories about Al Qaeda. This has been all in the news. Al Qaeda jailbreaks, Al Qaeda liquid bombs, Al Qaeda rebels fighting in Syria now. Okay, this was today. And stories about Al Qaeda, stories about Osama bin Laden. They always bring Osama bin Laden back somehow, some way. Okay, TSA and plane problems. Stories about, you know, TSA or plane problems, plane crashes, you know, planes clipping other planes on the runway, or planes being returned back to, you know, to the gate because of particular issues, whatever the issue may be. But the idea is plane problems triggers the trauma of September 11, because September 11 is considered widely to be the ultimate in plane problems, right? Number six, national security issues are in the news. Number seven, Pastor Terry Jones is brought back on the scenes. He triggers the trauma as well. About 2 weeks ago, he's back. And again, this is a 6 week period. He's come back on the scene and he promises that he is going to burn 3,000 Qurans on September 11th. 2013. How convenient. I have it written right here inside the book. Okay. Number eight, credible but unconfirmed threats, meaning unconfirmed terror threats. I have that as number eight. We always get this within the 6 weeks. We can go back to Yemen. Okay. These unconfirmed terror threats, no evidence or proof of this, and nothing ever happens. But that's not the point. The point is not to have a terror threat. The point is to trigger the subconsciously embedded trauma of September 11, 2001. Number nine, stories about New York City and / Ground Zero. Yesterday during my live video stream, I'm talking about this particular issue, New York, stories about New York City and Ground Zero. And I say, let's go over to CNN because I want to show you how mass media, in terms of it's all trauma-based programming. Again, you traumatize people, they begin to feel fearful. Once they become fearful, they externalize power. Once they externalize power, you maintain them inside a state of control. I go on to CNN and right there on the headline, where is the flag from September 11, 2001? What?
Like clockwork.
Like clockwork. It's perfectly predictable. That's another reason why there's no need to be fearful. You think I'm fearful of all these, you know, potential terror threats. No. It's just a script. It's just a script, nothing more. And then number 10, stories about Homeland Security. Now, all of these topics, these are called trigger stories. There's trigger digits. There's like 911, 9-11, 9/4/11. These are trigger digits. There's trigger words. There's trigger images. There's trigger characters. You know, Osama bin Laden is a trigger character. There's trigger movies. There's trigger television shows like 24. The point being is that what mass media has done as a tool of psychological warfare, understanding basic elements of human psychology, is that it has taken the trauma, subconsciously embedded trauma of September 11, 2001, that most people are oblivious to. Most people are completely unaware that it actually exists. The greatest traumas are those that we are oblivious to. And the global population was traumatized, whether or not we want to admit it or not. We were traumatized. I was. Most people were on that day. And those who actually seen video footage, even if you weren't alive then, when, you know, these retrospectives, every single September 11th, you know, the anniversary, we traumatized the next generation with the same propaganda and watching people death, destruction, and planes crashing into buildings and explosions. And burnt flesh and all this stuff. The point being is that what mass media does is it issues programming that triggers the subconsciously embedded trauma. And because it's triggering the trauma that's unresolved in the global population, on a subconscious level, people begin to feel antsy. They begin to think that maybe a terror attack is imminent. And then on a certain level, they begin to feel fearful. And then they begin to externalize power again, like on September 11, 2001. And then that's how you maintain people inside a state of control. If you know a person's trauma, all you have to do is trigger their trauma, and they're going to react in a very precise way. This is precisely what mass media does within the 6 weeks leading up to September 11 every single year. And this has been going on for 12 years. Let me just say one other thing, and that is that under normal circumstances, the subconscious mind would have resolved the trauma of September 11, 2001. This applies to any trauma in our lives, too. Whatever the trauma you've been through, I've been through trauma. It doesn't matter. Anyone listening here, you've been through trauma. Under normal circumstances, your subconscious mind, if it's given an opportunity to resolve a particular trauma, it will do it normally and naturally. However, if the subconscious mind is repeatedly traumatized, I'm going to say it again, if the subconscious mind is repeatedly traumatized, The subconscious mind, which is not aware of past, present, and future, it believes that everything is taking place right now. Whenever it is re-traumatized, it believes that September 11th is taking place all over again. How, therefore, can it heal the trauma if it is always thinking that September 11th is taking place all over again in the 6 weeks leading up to September 11th? Of every single year. So my point being is that understanding basic elements of human psychology and then understanding media cycles, because it's cyclical, you can get a very clear perspective in terms of the degrees of psychological warfare. And I say inside the book that the greatest means of control is not actualized through the manipulation of the psychological condition of the human species. The greatest means of control is actualized through the manipulation of the psychological condition of the human species. Actually, let me rephrase that. The greatest means of control is not actualized through military might, physical subjugation, or brute force. It's not physical. The greatest means of control is actualized through the manipulation of the psychological condition of the human species.
Oh, I totally agree with that. I mean, and it's funny because, you know, and I'm kind of guilty of this too, but on Facebook right now, you're seeing all these no war with Syria posts. And it's great to put that out there. It's great to put your stance out that you don't want this war, but our leaders are probably going to drop bombs. They are probably going to kill people. And those posts aren't going to make a difference, but people get so horny in this country for freedom, and everyone's so proud of how free they are, but nobody's free. Try deciding you want to go to the beach with your family instead of to work tomorrow, and you watch your entire life collapse. That's not freedom. And what can we do to get out of this cycle? What can we do to, you know, actually put our foot down against the people we've elected and stop some of this stuff?
Yeah, well, see, the thing is that the reason why people are elected in this illusion of government exists is because they externalize power. And there's a four-step process in terms of how people get, or in terms of this procedure, because it comes down to mind control. Because even how people react to these stories, it's really about mind control. Prior to these stories coming out, people don't care about Syria. Okay.
Right.
Prior to Trayvon Martin and you know, it becoming a media blitz, what I call it, media saturation, no one cared about Trayvon Martin. Okay, we can go down the line, okay, and people can say, oh, that's insensitive. No, I'm telling y'all that the reason why people focus in on particular topics is not because it's relevant to them. It's because media told them to.
It's a reaction.
It's a reaction. It's reactionary. Okay, so it's not proactive. It's reactive. And my point being is that one of the reasons why in terms of you know, the illusion of government exists is because of a four-step process. And the first thing is trauma. Okay, September 11th as an example. You traumatize people. And people are traumatized throughout their lives. They're traumatized by events that they experience. They're traumatized by the public education system. They're traumatized by television. They're traumatized by movies. That's why when you go on, you're traumatized by the news. It's called horror news. You go on to CNN right now. You go on to Reuters. You go on to Fox, Al Jazeera. You go on to RT. It doesn't matter where you go. And it's all death, destruction, war, and gore. We live in a trauma-based culture. And the point being is that whenever you traumatize someone, they begin to feel fearful. And once people feel fearful long enough, they begin to externalize power. What that means is that at a certain point, they believe that whatever the problem is, real or fake, they think that someone else must come to save the day. They need someone to rely on. They need someone to take care of them. They need someone to make it okay. Okay, that's where government comes in. So the point being is that it is this four-step process. You traumatize people. They come into levels of fear. They externalize power, and then that's how you maintain them inside of a state of control. Now, government literally translates to mind control. So in other words, to govern means to rule or to control. Mind, government, M-E-N-T, that is a derivative of menti, which means mind. So it literally translates to mind control. So the point being is that the manner through which the perception that people have of government is based upon mind control, and government itself literally means mind control. So in terms of it's paradoxical in essence, because what we have is that the reason why people believe that there is a government is because of mind control, and government literally means mind control. Now, I'm going to say this, that the politicians that are elected, they are elected because people externalize power. But the reason why people externalize power is because they are fearful. They feel like they need someone else to save the day or to take care of their problem, to solve their problem. And then the question becomes, why are they fearful? They're fearful because they're always traumatized. The point being is, and I'm going to say it, Barack Obama has no power. He's just a front man. He is just an actor who reads his lines. Lines. This is what I call the global motion picture stage show. That's why when people post all these things on Facebook, they're just misdirected, because what they're doing is they're focusing it on the puppet as if it really matters, as if he's the one making this decision. No, what he does is he does like every single actor in Hollywood does. He is given a script. He reads his lines verbatim. And he does what his puppet master tells him to do, or masters tell him to do. So the point being is that, and I want to take this a step further. People are right now, people are talking about, we don't want war with Syria. It's not a war. Okay, a war, there has to be two sides to a war. And I want people, yes, but I want people to understand this. Have you yet seen a standing army in Syria? Have you seen conclusive evidence and proof of a, because see, what's taking place in Syria?
We're getting worked up.
Yes, that's right. But I'm saying you can't have a war unless you have two sides. But have you seen a standing army in Syria? Did you see a standing army in Iraq? Did you see a standing army in Libya? Okay, now the reason why I'm saying this is because this is just a script. It's like a stage show movie. It's called the regime change script. This is how you get regimes out of power. You don't necessarily have to have a war, just have a rumors of war. And then what we find is that we never see any evidence or proof of a battle between the NATO forces and the standing army. Why? Because there is no standing army. So well, people, let's be clear. As we continue to react, let's ask questions. Do we have any evidence or proof that would make us need to react in the first place? And the answer to that question as it relates to war nowadays, because we're talking about psychological warfare, we're not talking about physical because it's not necessary anymore. You just have to give people the illusion of a war. You traumatize people with the potential of a war. People become fearful because they believe that there is going to be a war. And as a consequence, they externalize power, and then they externalize power to the very people that they believe that they're in objection to, like Barack Obama. So the point being is that, I mean, it's like a, it's just like a matrix of confusion. And that's why when we get to the point where we're simply reacting based upon traumatization and fear, understand that nothing will change. If we want to change anything, it's the change starts from within, and we have to, in the first place, begin to internalize power. See, the thing is, and I'll just end with this, that for me, potential wars in other countries that never happen. You got to have evidence or proof. See, back in the day, let's use some critical thinking here, and this is a logic stream. In the 50s and in the 60s, when there was a war, we would see video. Well, I wasn't alive then, but there was video footage that was circulating on the television. For instance, Vietnam, horrific graphic images that you can find nowadays. You can just Google it, or you can go onto YouTube and you can find it. And you just see horrific, and you see both sides fighting. You see both sides death and destruction because it was a real war. These days, however, you don't see that. You don't see the war in Iraq. You don't see these images, the video footage. You don't, in terms of Libya, you don't see it. You don't see these rebels fighting against a standing army. In Syria, you don't see these rebels fighting against you may see a quick snippet that doesn't really define anything and it's shaky, so forth and so on. The point being is, how is it possible that 40 years ago, when there was a war, there was video footage as evidence or proof to prove that there was a war? However, nowadays, when there is a war, there is no evidence or proof that proves conclusively video footage that there is a war. And interestingly enough, when they show supposed video footage looks like it was recorded on a VHF camcorder from 1985. Same thing with Al-Qaeda. You mean to tell me that that over in the Middle East or wherever, they don't have access to a cell phone that can take HD footage where you can see clear location, the vantage point that you're looking at from the camera is not cropped so close in to where you can actually distinguish certain things and you can actually see a standing army fighting against another standing army? My point being, ladies and gentlemen, is that nowadays you don't have to have a war, and that's why there's no evidence ever of any war. And see, some people may argue, well, that's because it's all controlled and they don't let the information get out. No. We are living in an information age where anyone at any given time can take a cell phone in Syria, in Libya, or in Iraq for that matter, take video footage of the standing army fighting against these rebels or the standing army fighting against NATO, upload it onto YouTube, and everyone all around the world would be able to see it. And yet, this is not what takes place. Same thing with the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. The same thing with the supposed death of Osama bin Laden. They don't have to be real events. You just issue the propaganda, and people buy into it, and people react. Why? Because they're being traumatized. They react in fear. They externalize power. And ultimately, they maintain themselves inside a state of control. So I want people to understand that nowadays, it's not a physical war. It's a war of human psychology. It is manipulating people's perceptions so that they will believe that there is a war without any evidence or proof. So what I'm saying is that if we go back 40 years ago and we go to the Vietnam War, are we led to believe that somehow nowadays technology has regressed? that nowadays we don't have the technology to take video footage and upload it onto the internet. Although back in the day, in the 60s and 70s, when there was wars that were taking place, the technology was there then. No, the truth of the matter is that nowadays, much of what we call considered to be wars are not actual physical, tangible wars. It's an issue of perceptions management, and our perceptions are being managed. This is what we call mind control, to we believe in things without any evidence or proof. Now, I will say this, that if there is a war in Syria coming up here shortly, okay, and I will propose that it has nothing to do with Syria anyway, it has to do with September 11, 2001, in the reinstallation of what I call the 9-1 fear-based mind control program. If there's an actual war, we should see hundreds, if not thousands, of videos of this war uploaded onto the internet for everyone to see. Why? Because in Syria, people have access to the internet. In Syria, people have cell phones, people have camcorders, and therefore there should be substantive evidence or proof. So what we can say then, therefore, that if there is a war that is going to take place in Syria, we have to see the evidence or proof, not sourced from mainstream news where they give you a quick clip of 20 seconds where you don't know where they're fighting or who's fighting. I'm talking about everyday people like you and me uploaded this content up onto the YouTube, up onto, you know, wherever, whatever internet outlet video site there is that they can have gain access to. And there should be massive amounts of videos uploaded if there is a war. Now, if that is not the case, if we don't see this, then what we should be able to understand in terms of adequate discernment through intellectual process is that there is no war. I want people to be very clear about that.
Yeah, I mean, you're making some great points, and you got my mind kind of in a catch-22, because it makes me wonder, because I have friends that don't pay any attention to what's going on, and I get super frustrated. I'm like, you know, you're an economic slave, and you don't even know it. You're ignorant. And then I come along, and I'm like, are you paying attention to what's going on in Syria? And they're like, no, what's going on? And I tell them, and of course, I'm like, you know, I think this is a false flag, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I come along and scare them. Am I being a pawn playing right into the hands of the elite? Like, should I leave these ignorant people alone?
Well, the thing is that this is important too, that, you know, there, it's just levels of understanding. Okay, so for instance, and I'll use myself as an example, it's levels of awareness, it's levels of understanding. And in other words, what I mean by this is that, you know, there was a time where I used to watch the mainstream news and I used to watch television. I don't even have a television at home nowadays. And yet I can speak on particular topics with a degree of clarity of intellectual process that most people who are watching TV, they can't do that. But they will say, well, how do you know what's going on in the world if you don't watch television? Well, that's the great paradox. Why is it that you can't articulate like I do or speak on these topics like I do or have a level of intellectual process or discernment as to what is real and what is not when you're watching television all the time? And I don't. What does that mean? OK, let's think about that for a moment. The point being is that it's just different levels of understanding and different levels of awareness. And one of the things that happens for those of us, we begin to progress in particular ways where we may reach a particular level of understanding as to what's taking place in the world, or different, we want to call it the control network. When you begin to understand and the mechanisms of it all, the complexities of it all, we may begin, because we come out of a particular dream state, if you will, and then we come into this level of awareness, this new level of awareness. Sometimes we get to the point where we may think that we've come to the apex of understanding, okay? And therefore, when we look at those who may be where we were at, we look at them and we try to kind of like, you know, bring them along. Look, don't you see this? But really, we just have a different level of understanding. It's not that somehow we're more progressed than they are. It's just our perceptions is different. The point being is that we should never get to the point where we believe that somehow we've reached the apex, because there was a time where I was like, you know, yelling at people, telling people, you know, 9-1-1 was an inside job and you're, you know, I never use the term sheeple and people you're asleep. But in terms of the terminology, this is badgering people. But it's also based upon this notion that of a superiority complex, that we feel superior because we feel like we know something more than someone else. But Guess what? Those people, they feel like they know more than someone else. And those people that they feel they know more than, they feel the same thing about someone else. And it's just different levels of understanding and different levels of awareness. But where I'm at right now, I've gone beyond that point of like looking at people and saying I need to wake people up, because that's not even the point, you know, because the point of the matter is that we're all asleep on some level and we have to come to grips with that. It's just different areas of our life. We may be asleep in terms of our awareness of economics. We may be asleep in terms of our spiritual progressions. We may be asleep in terms of mass media and mind control. We may be sleeping in terms of understanding the dynamics of a debt-based system here in the United States, what have you, or really globally. The point being is that it's just different levels of awareness and different levels of sleep. And when we come to that point, then we don't have to feel like we have to change other people, or we have to demean other people to change them, or beat other people over the head. See, part of the paradigm in terms of the network of control is to divide and conquer people. And one of the ways that you divide and conquer people is that you give them information that puts them at odds with each other. Okay, so even as an example, because my book is about September 11, 2001, looking at it from a psychological perspective, I talk about how in the book, how the mainstream version of it, September 11th, and the people who abide to the mainstream version became in conflict ultimately with those who took a more what we would call alternative version. And then people who take, you know, different alternative versions, I give a whole list of the different alternative versions, they also, you find that they too combat each other. They too fight amongst each other. And what we call the truth movement, they're always fussing and fighting with each other and demeaning each other and, you know, just tearing each other down. Well, that's the mechanism of control. You issue propaganda on both sides to get people stimulated in a particular way, and they react because everyone believes that they know what the truth is, right? And everyone wants to change everyone else because they feel like they're entitled to that and they're superior to everyone else. But then they fight amongst each other, and what happens is it establishes what I call a vast divide. It's like the divisions on many different levels. It's a matrix of confusion, because ultimately people become confused because there's so much information out there that kind of triggers people in certain ways. But then within this matrix of confusion, you get this massive divide amongst people. And as long as you have people, and this is when I'm talking about mind control and controlling people, it's not physical, it's psychological. As long as you have people fussing and fighting amongst each other, you don't necessarily have to do much in terms of controlling them, because they will expend so much energy fussing, fighting against each other, that all you have to do is issue the propaganda to keep them in that state. And as you keep them in that state, you can control them indefinitely, because as they fuss and fight amongst each other, they're not looking beyond that paradigm of conflict and not realizing how they're being manipulated to be into that conflict. And so long as we're manipulated in that way, nothing's going to change. That's why for me at this point, like, I've stepped out of the matrix in terms of this need to try to change other people or try to call people sheeple or try to make people feel less than I am. I've transcended that. And the reason why is because I recognize that it's just different levels of understanding, different levels of awareness. And I'm going to say this for any of y'all out there listening to this. Understand that the paradigm of calling people sheeple is the result of mind control. Okay, it's not that you woke up as a child and you said to yourself, I'm going to call, you were born and you came to a level of understanding. You said, I'm going to call people sheeple. No, this is propaganda that has been issued, and mainly from the quote unquote truth movement mouthpieces. And this sense that somehow people are less than, it sets up a dichotomy of superiority and inferiority. And as long as you have these concepts of superiority and inferiority, people are going to be in conflict with each other. It's just like the concept of race, which is just a concept. You establish through pseudoscience a concept of race. And then within this concept of race, you begin to set up a hierarchy of racial superiority, racial inferiority. Racial superiority are those who are in the know, those who are better than everyone else, those who are awake. And then those who are racially inferior, those are the people who are asleep. Those are the sheeple. Those are the people that don't know anything.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what happens is now this dichotomy in terms of this hierarchy, if you will, sets up and establishes this need for conflict. And ultimately, this conflict leads to the perpetuation of the control, because, as long as you have people in opposition to each other, nothing's going to change, because they're going to exasperate themselves. In other words, they're going to use so much energy focusing in on their own conflict with other people, calling each other sheeple, calling people conspiracy theories, nut jobs, so forth. So it goes both ways. And they're in conflict. Well, look, keep people in conflict about, you know, what they believe took place on September 11th. Keep them in conflict about religion. Keep them in conflict in terms of race. Keep them in conflict in terms of male-female relationships. And as long as you keep them in conflict, it's so much more easier to control them, because they're not focusing in on how they're being controlled. They're just focusing in on fortifying their control by being in opposition amongst each other.
I mean, you're making great points, and I completely understand. It's hard, because I want things to change in this world, and I get frustrated because some people aren't paying attention. And, you know, that's... That creates that conflict. I take the anger that I'm getting from my situation, and I project it onto people that aren't paying enough attention. And yeah, that's not right. But you did mention male and female roles, and I do want to talk about that, because you've done some great work there. How has the male-female relationship and our gender behavior been warped by the elites in the media arm?
Yeah, one of the things that mass media does, and I've been talking about this on a live video stream, is that it's not designed to give us truth, evidence, or proof. It's designed to give us fear. And part of the fear is to set up situations where people are in conflict. Okay, so as long as people are in conflict, you know, it's the same thing. They're going to traumatize each other. And when they traumatize each other, they're going to feel fearful. And when they feel fearful, they externalize power. And once they externalize power, you can maintain them inside a state of control. I mean, that's a protocol for mind control. You can apply it to any area of life, including male-female relationships. And one thing that we find in terms of mass media is the perpetuation of archetypal relationships between men and women that are totally dysfunctional. I mean, we can ask the question, you know, when was the last time we saw a positive male-female relationship being expressed on the news or being expressed in a television show or being expressed in a movie? I'm talking about a positive male-female relationship. Most of us, we don't even know what that is. We know many of us, we never saw that in our own families. And, you know, we get all this social programming of dysfunctionality, how men relate to women, how men are to perceive women, you know, sexist ideology about women. Some women having certain issues with men, they have this, you know, superiority complex over men. It goes vice versa. I mean, but all of this stems out of propaganda and programming that we get from media. Because if you look at television, you look at movies, you look at the general themes that we find in mass media as it relates to male-female relationships, and you will find that one of the things that plays itself out is a division, okay, a hierarchy established amongst men and women. And part of the reason why this is problematic, I call this the male versus female war imprint program. In other words, to get males and females to be at war with each other, again, divide and conquer. And there's so many different strategies that are employed in order to get us at odds with each other. And as a consequence, one of the things that takes place is the devolution of the establishment of positive male-female relationships, which is the foundation of a family institution. And the family institution is the foundation of anything that is transformative on planet Earth that reaches beyond one generation. You see, the control network, it reaches beyond one generation. It's ingeniously set up to where it's going to perpetuate itself so long as people maintain it as is and continue to do what we're doing. It's going to perpetuate itself. It can for thousands of years. Okay, it's self-sustaining. That the force that presents to it its greatest opposition would be that which reaches beyond one generation, because you're going to have to deal with it across generations. I know we get, you know, we want to change things right away. Oh no, brother, let me tell you, it's going to take generations. We got to be patient with this process. I understand. I know. I see the network. I see the programming. I you know, the matrix itself. I understand how it functions, how it's manipulating people. But it's going to take many, many generations down the line. So in terms of us as a species reaching into new future generations, how do we do that? We do that through family institutions. But how do we do that? We do that through positive male-female relationships. So the question becomes, how do we do that? See, the issue is that what mass media has done in terms of propaganda is that it has issued for decades now, this need for men and women to be at odds with each other, for us to be in competition with each other, to see each other as our opposites. That's why we say things like opposite sex. Well, opposite implies opposition. Opposition implies war. War, that's the male versus female war imprint program. So even the terminology, we can begin to change the terminology. No, my wife, she is my complement. Compliment, complimentary. Okay, you see, so I say my complimentary half. Okay, this is positive male-female relationships. We work with this concept that we call the wholeness principle. My wife is not outside of me. We're part of a whole. I'm just a masculine representation of her. She's a feminine representation of me. And we work our family institution this way. We have five beautiful children. We raise them at home. We homeschool, so forth and so on. We don't complain so much about what the system is doing. We don't complain about the propaganda and programming that is in the public education system. What we do is we've established a positive male-female relationship based upon a wholeness principle. We've established a healthy, vibrant family institution, and we're raising the next generation so that they're not experiencing what we experience in this quote unquote matrix. And if if my children do the same, and their children's children does the same, and their children does the same, now we have something to be in opposition to the control network. But it's not going to happen in one generation. So I want people to understand is that's why the main focal point in terms of the psychological warfare as it relates to the disempowerment of the species is on male-female relationships. And that's why a lot of the alternative media propaganda is useless, because it's not focusing in on the need for us to come together as men and women, which is the foundation of life. Instead, we're focusing in on conspiracy theories. We're focusing on reptilian shapeshifters. We're focusing in on martial law and HAARP. We're focusing in on FEMA death camps and FEMA coffins. All of that, I understand. Like, I've gone through all that. Most of y'all, if you're into that stuff, look, understand, I've been through all that. If you sat down with me for 15 minutes, I will run circles around you. You will literally be, your jaw will drop, and you say, oh, I didn't even know that. Yes, I've already been through that. But see, at a certain point, it's just levels. You get to a certain point, and you realize, what is the most efficient and effective means of transforming the reality that we're experiencing collectively as a species here on planet Earth? And I will tell you, the way that you do it is by reaching into the future via generations. In other words, your progeny. OK, because most of us, we have to start all over at the age of 22. No, okay, or at the age of 25. Wait a minute, something's not quite right. Yeah, but we just spent 25 years in that matrix believing that everything was okay.
Yeah.
Then we get to the age of 25, and now we got to start all over. Some of us, we get to the age of 30, 40, 50 years old. Well, what about that 50 years that we wasted in the matrix? Why? Well, the reason why we wasted those 50 years in the matrix, I'm not going to say wasted, we experienced that 50 years in that matrix, was because we were not raised in a family institution that understood the dynamics and then taught us appropriately so that we can transcend the matrix itself. So the point being is that what if I was my own father? What if from the time I was conceived to the time I came into the age of 37, I'm 37 years old now, and my father, my mother, they understood the dynamics of this quote-unquote matrix, and they prepared me to transcend it every single day of my life, where would I be today at the age of 37? So the point being is that a lot of the information out there is a misdirection. We focus in on problems as opposed to solutions. I'll tell you, one of the major solutions, if not one of the most important solutions, is to learn how to establish positive male-female relationships. And if you want to take it a step further, to build a family institution, raise future generations so that they have a level of understanding that will empower them so that they can reach beyond the paradigm that exists here on planet Earth. And it's going to take multiple generations. It's going to take people investing into the future, not simply focusing in on problems that we experience like right now, like Syria. No, we have to look even beyond that and understand that in terms of the global motion picture stage show and all of the distractions, yes, we investigate, we research into those things. I've done that. I have documentary works on my website, linenhonorfilms.com, that no one can touch. Okay, a lot of people are into this information. Look, go to my website, linenhonorfilms.com, and you will be amazed. I'm not saying don't get into that stuff. Don't get into the alternative media information. What I'm saying is that ultimately we got to recognize where is the true power, and it is internal. And the true power comes from, that's why most of the propaganda in terms of coming from the mainstream news and the alternative news, it functions to create divisions amongst people. And one of the major divisions that has been perpetuated across time is the division between men and women. And that is something that my wife and I, we are trying to assist other people to resolve so that we are not in conflict with each other on this basic humanistic level. Again, this is the foundation of all life. So this is why it's so important. The foundation of all life here on planet Earth is the joining of the masculine and feminine, men and women coming together and duplicating ourselves and creating life. If we are at odds with each other, if we see each other as being in competition with each other, if we are at war with each other, then we are disempowered by one half at least. And the point being is that if we are already struggling to try to attain a level of respectability here on planet Earth as a species in the midst of the control network, well, how much longer are we going to struggle if now, instead of operating based upon 100% a man and a woman, we're only operating based upon 50% a man alone who's in opposition with a woman, or a woman alone who's in opposition with a man? See, what I'm saying is that we have to embrace our full power. And you understand, men, that you are half of the equation. Women, you are half of the equation. You join with your species half in a positive male-female relationship. Now you got some power to work with. And not only 100% power, but then you create children, and those are additional power plants inside your power structure. You do this for future generations. You do this for 100 years. And oh my, this whole control network that we find on planet Earth will cease to exist. It will not have the capacity to hold that type of power. So that's what I'm saying. That's why so much of what we get, to get back to your question, in terms of the programming and the mind control, is designed to cause us to be at odds with each other as men and women.
Well said, man. And let's take some time, because we got like 15, 20 minutes left. Let's focus only on the solutions. And, you know, me and my girlfriend, we talk about this stuff a fair amount, and we do our best, but sometimes we do slip into, you know, the examples that we've seen. We have fights where we slip right into it, and I know it's happening. In the back of my head, I'm like, you know, this is fucking stupid. What are we doing? But, you know, you get egotistical, and you want to win. How do we keep from slipping into that? How would you describe a model positive female male relationship?
Yes, excellent question, and I like your candor too, because that's so important. Because a lot of times us men, we ego, it's like, I'm not going to admit that I, you know, and my wife and I, we talk a lot about this. My wife and I, we never argue, never fuss and fight,
man.
You know, because the thing is this, brother, you know, if you know I'm sure you've had your trials and tribulations and struggles in life, and I'm sure that your girlfriend has had them. Even the term girlfriend, I don't like using the term, but I'll use it here. I'm sure that you care for her, but I'm sure that she's been through her traumas, trials, and tribulations too. And see, a lot of us, because we've been traumatized in life, when we have an opportunity to experience something greater, we should really embrace it, you know, to experience something that is, you know, let me just use an example. Like, for instance, my wife, like, she had such a horrible childhood that why would I want her to harm her in any way when she spent so much of her childhood already being traumatized? You see what I'm saying? So why would I? So in other words, like, as a man, my objective is to try to make her life as peaceful as possible and as blessed as possible. And I have the power to do that. And she has the power to do that for me. And the same thing, my childhood was so horrible and you know, traumatizing. You know, my wife, I'm sure in her mind, it's like, look, you know, if I can spend the next 50 years with this man and we can just, you know, do our best not to argue and fuss and fight, not to bring each other drama, not to hurt each other, then that's the thing to do. Because what we're ultimately doing is we're transcending the paradigm of our childhood, which was rooted in trauma. So I mean, there's different ways we can look at this. But as a man, I just want men to understand that it is very important that, you know, you have to be the one who's at the front line of defense for your mate, for your wife, for your girlfriend, what have you. What I mean by that is that if anyone else or anything else was to harm her, you should be at the front line of defense. That's what a man does. But that also means checking your own behavior, and you may be harming her, too. You see what I'm saying? So what this gets to is that as men, we have to have a level of self-discipline. And see, a lot of us, we don't have self-discipline. We're not raised that way. You know, it's like free, you know, carefree. We do what we want to. You know, we have sex with as many women as we want to. We say what we want to. It doesn't matter. But we have to be more sensitive than that, especially when we're in the context of a male-female relationship, because we're now dealing with a woman, and we have to recognize that once you get into that union, whether you're in a marriage, whether it's a, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, what have you, you're living together, you're supposed to be, as a masculine being, the primary protector of the woman. But that also means that you protect her from yourself. If you have aspects of your character that wants to fuss and fight, you want to win. What are we trying to win? Yeah. You know, it's not a competition. And see, this is what I mean by it's just different levels of awareness. For a man, when you get to the point where you realize your true power, your power is not to dominate or to win. Your power is to make sure that you're in service to your mate so that her life can be as blessed as it can be for the rest of her life. And see, the thing is that you have the power to do that for her, but you have to discipline yourself. And you have to be self-disciplined to such a degree to where you don't allow yourself to get to the point where you're harming her in any way. And I want people to understand that arguing, it is a form of psychological trauma. You know, because ultimately what people are doing when they argue, that's why I don't argue with people. I don't care who it is. I'm not going to argue with people. It's like, look, if you have a different view, that's fine. Don't try to bait me into arguing because it's not, you know, if you don't agree with anything I have to say, that's fine too. Just move along. It's no big deal. But the point being is that when people argue, what's taking place is one person or both people are trying to brutalize the other person using words to such a degree that the other person will capitulate and accept their view. Mm-hmm. So the point being is that ultimately it is a form of warfare. It's just it's verbal warfare. And so for you men out there, just think about it. You know, why would you want to verbally go into war verbally with your mate if you're supposed to be the protector or you're supposed to really love her and care for her? See, it doesn't even make sense. So what I'm suggesting for men to do is just, you know, check that behavior. And you should be the one to check it first because you have the power. Discipline yourself as a man, masculine being. You say, okay, if we get to that point and I can see us starting to get up and rev up to the point where now first we were talking calmly and then we started talking a little bit louder and then we started getting like, now we're arguing and now we're going back and forth. Now we're yelling at each other. Stop it. And instead, and before it even gets there and say, you know what? I love you so much that I can see where this is going, but I love you so much and I don't want us to do this anymore. And so let's just not even talk about this. Let's just let this go. And you know, I just love you. And it's okay. We can be in disagreement. It's okay. See, most genuine women, if a man is caring enough on that level to where he can check it, she will go along with that. As a feminine being, she will go along. He can lead her out of this need to argue, but he has to lead himself out of it first. You see what I'm saying? I know it's tough because this is the program. It's called the male versus female war imprint program. And so much of our interaction is based upon that. Even the predation that we have towards women as men, the sexist ideology, we're always supposed to be on the prowl trying to find a woman and have sex with her. That's all based upon predator prey. That's male versus female war imprint programming. It's all about war, conflict. And so in our whole interactions in terms of how we've been raised, what we saw in our parents, what we see in the media, what we see in our friends, men and women are always at odds with each other. But it's the most unnatural thing to take place. See, I mean, it's so simple. When you get to that point and you start to get to the point where you're arguing, hey, look, baby, that's okay. Let's just go take a shower.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because you're not going to argue while you're in the shower with your mate. You ain't going to argue. You know, doggone well, you ain't going to be arguing. Okay, let's go take a walk in the park. Let's go out in nature. Okay, let's go take a nap. Let's just relax. Okay, you can't argue. See, so the point being is that any of you men out there, if you have this issue where you're arguing with your mate, And even if she starts it, it doesn't matter because you have the power, you have the discipline, and you and if you phrase it the right way, look, baby, I know I can see where this is going. Okay, we're in a disagreement. Let's just talk about this later because I don't want us to get to the point where I'm harming you with my words and I love you too much to do that. You say that, and most genuine women, they will go along with that. Not only will they go along with that, they will respect you even more because you took the time to care for them in that moment instead of allowing the ego to take control. And now you're brutalizing her with the words, trying to make her capitulate and believe what you believe in. So this is another dynamic. Just be clear about that. You men, you have the power to transform a situation simply by how you orient yourself. And if you always orient yourself to your mate as someone who's going to dominate, control, and win, you're always going to lose. Ultimately, the relationship itself is going to lose. But if you orient yourself towards a relationship as the protector of, as the guider of, as the leader of, even, I know a lot of people don't want to hear that term, but understand that if you can transform any situation with a woman, that if the situation has become volatile, and you can lead the situation, you can lead the whole relationship out of that situation just by stepping up to the plate as a man and taking the high road. Most genuine women, they will respect you because you do that, and they will go along with it.
That's great advice, man. Let's look at the flip side of the coin. I mean, for the females out there, what should they know about being strong women? Where's their role put them?
Yes. And what I would say, and I use my wife as an example. Okay. And see, most of my work, I don't focus in on what women should do because I feel like as a man, like, we got to get our stuff together as men.
Right.
Okay.
Good point.
But I will say this, that, you know, for women, because a lot of the programming, you know, and also a lot of the trauma. So getting back to, you know, the trauma, there are a lot of women who have a jaded view as to what men are, real men, and how men really function. And because of this, okay, and it's based upon trauma, because, for instance, if they've been abandoned by their own father, or if they were sexually molested by men as children, or if they've been in horrible relationships where they were abused by men, there is at some, and see, many women have had those experiences. Okay, more so than men, most, you know, there are many women who have had that experience. So the need to deal with the trauma, the need for healing, and the reason why is because, and I've said this in other videos, is that we as a species, we tend to see things through the lens of our traumas. Okay, so whatever the trauma is, we tend to see things. So, in other words, if we were traumatized by men, how we begin to see men is through the lens of traumatization. Okay, and that's not necessarily fair to the men. So the point that I'm getting at is that women, ultimately, you got to heal the trauma, and also you have to be open to the possibility of experiencing a reality with a true man, with a real man, with an honorable man. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because oftentimes it's an issue of being prepared. You prepare yourself as a woman by healing yourself, okay, from the various degrees of trauma, and then begin to envision in your mind a possibility that reaches beyond the trauma where you can actually be in a positive male-female relationship. If you so choose, you can raise a family, so forth and so on. The reason I'm bringing this up is because oftentimes what happens is because the healing process doesn't take place, women are not adequately prepared. Same thing for men. They're not adequately prepared for a male-female relationship. So they may even be in the company of a man that they could actually build a long-standing male-female relationship with, and actually he may be a good father, good husband, so forth and so on. But because they're not prepared, there's no way that it can actually materialize and be sustained long term. And another dynamic, because I want to put this out there too, that takes place for women to consider. And I know this is difficult because we live in an age now where women have been given this programming of independence, you know, and men too, to a certain degree. Men sexually, you know, you be independent of women. And what that means is that you don't have to have any commitments to women. You have sex with as many women as you want to. So you can still deal with them, but you're independent of them. You don't have to be responsible in terms of your penis. You can have sex with as many as you want to. Women are also given the program of independence. Independence implies this need to be divided amongst the whole. So in other words, you divide people. This is divide and conquer. Women are given this program that you're independent of men. You don't need men. So there's a lot of women who say things like that. Like, I don't need a man. Why would you say that? You know, because when we say that, because the idea is that when we say that you don't need a man, it's like a man saying, I don't need a woman. But that's because the value that the man places on the woman is low, and the value that the woman places on the man is low. So where does that come from? So what I'm getting at ultimately here is that for women to understand that if you go to the healing process and prepare yourself for a positive male relationship, you prepare yourself for a marriage, so forth and so on, you also have to prepare yourself to be within a relationship where you're dealing with a true man. An honorable man. You see what I'm saying? And if you bring the baggage of trauma into the equation and you put that trauma on him, it will be unfair to him. So part of what I'm saying is that for women to, you know, really get yourself in alignment for a positive male affirmation, this is if you want a positive male affirmation relationship, because not everyone does, but if you want a positive male affirmation relationship, heal the trauma and don't bring that baggage. Don't present that baggage to him and don't see him through the lens of your trauma, because when you see him through the lens of your trauma, you're going to react to him and deal with him as if he's your traumatizer. In other words, you're going to look at him as if he's the one that harmed you, and therefore how you interact with him is going to be based upon that trauma, and that's not fair to him. Ultimately, it's not going to be sustainable, the positive male affirmation relationship that could have been. He could have been the man that you could have raised a family with. He could have been the man who could have been totally dedicated to you as an honorable man and in service to you. So what I'm getting at is the need for women, of course, to go through the healing process and to get to the point where they're willing to accept this relationship with an honorable man, where they don't bring in the baggage from past experiences and past pain and past traumas that will jade their vision as to this man and jade their vision as to the possibility of establishing a longstanding positive male female relationship and ultimately establishing a positive family institution if they so choose.
That's great advice also, man. Before we do go, we got to spend a little time talking about children. I mean, it's a big conversation between my girl and I. I'm sure a lot of people are in the same boat. We feel pretty awake and aware of the world, and we sometimes talk about what we would do with children. Would we vaccinate? Would we send them to a public school? Would we circumcise? And these are really tough questions because it's easy to make unpopular decisions for yourself, but it gets a little scary when you're talking about another person's life.
Yes, yes. And that's part of the growth process, too, because when we have children, it's an opportunity for us to grow as individuals, because we're so used to maybe dealing with each other, man and wife, boyfriend, girlfriend. Now you start to consider children, you know, now you're dealing with another life. And sometimes because of the matrix, it's like you have to make decisions based upon your level of awareness. When we talked about that earlier, it's just different levels of awareness. Yeah. You have to make decisions that may not necessarily be popular. You know what I'm saying? You have to make choices that other people will look upon you and they frown, like, what are you doing? You know, you don't vaccinate. Why not? You don't have your children in the public education system. Why not? Like, we haven't vaccinated. We have five children. We never vaccinated any of them. We don't have our children in the public education. This is a choice that we've made. We also home birthed our last three children. That means my wife and I, for our last three children, we gave birth to them at home, just me and my wife. Our first two, we did at a birthing center. When we did it at the birthing center, we got a lot of resistance from people. What? You're not going to have it at the hospital. Why the hell would I want to have my children in the hospital when the hospital is where people go sick and the dying go? That just makes no sense. That's what I'm saying. Like, this is just critical thinking. Circumcision. I was circumcised, but that's really just a form of sexual abuse. That's a form of sexual molestation. Okay, people need to, it's sexual trauma. Again, we're getting back to that. Trauma, fear, the externalization of power, and then ultimately control. You know, people are traumatized in that way, men in particular, from birth, and then that traumatization is passed down to future generations without critical thought. Think about it. As a man, you're supposed to be the front line of defense for your family, the front line of defense for your woman, your front line of defense for your children, and you're going to let someone cut pieces of your child's penis off and you call yourself a man? Get the hell out of here. So my point is, see, a lot of things that we do, even though we may feel uncomfortable with the choices that we make and we may get resistance from people, a lot of things that we do, it's not based upon intellectual process. And ultimately, as a man, you're compromised. Your masculinity is compromised when you cut pieces of your son's penis off because it was done to you. Well, just because you were sexually molested, that means that your children have to be sexually molested. Just because you went to the public education system, that means your children have to go to the public education system. Just because your father was abusive to your mother, that means that you have to abuse your wife. Just because your father was a drug addict, alcoholic, a crackhead, that means that you have to do the same. No, do something better, bro. Why? Because you have the power to do something better. So there's a lot of things that we do that are just simply programs that are passed down from one generation to the next, and it traumatizes the next generation. And when we begin to think in terms of our family institution, we're dealing with someone, we begin to think, okay, how are we going to navigate this? What's the best course? What I always say is always do the best thing for your child. Do the best thing. It doesn't matter what society has to say. It doesn't matter what the quote-unquote government has to say, or Barack Obama has to say, or the public education system, or any truth movement mouthpiece has to say. It doesn't matter what Lennon Honor has to say, okay? It does not matter. What matter is, as a man and woman, you all get on the same page. What is the best thing for my child? Now, if the best thing is to have them in the public education system based upon your situation and circumstances, then so be it. If the best thing is to circumcise for you, although I don't see how it is, you're on the same page as men and women, then so be it. You make the choice together. You get on the same page. If you want to become a vegan or a vegetarian, you want to do things a little bit different, get on the same page. Okay, do it from the beginning. Even do it before conception. A lot of people, they wait too long. Then they get into conflicts, the war, male versus female war program. The woman wants to home birth. The man wants to have it out of the hospital because they didn't plan. The woman wants to homeschool. The man wants to in the public education system. The man wants to to cut pieces of his son's penis off, but the woman's like, no, I don't want to do that. Okay, get on the same page. The point being is that ultimately the decision is between the two, and you always put it in the context of what is in the best interest of our children. Fascinatingly enough, too, the reason why this global system of control exists is because it is passed down from one generation to the next.
Yes.
With what we do, how we behave, how we relate to each other as men and women, how we choose to give birth, how we choose to conceive children, how we choose to educate them. Y'all do understand that the education system is designed to perpetuate the system.
Yeah.
That's what the public education system does. So what I'm saying, just to make a short story even longer, dear brother, is that ultimately it comes down to a man and a woman in a committed relationship asking the critical question, what's in the best interest of my child in terms of its education, in terms of its health, in terms of vaccination, in terms of even the term that they use. I just say, look, cutting pieces of your son's penis off, whatever the case may be, what's in the best interest of the child. And as long as if you commit to that and you honor that, you will find that you will make the best choice. And when you make the best choice for your children, you will be rewarded. I mean, their growth. See, my children's their growth. It far outweighs where I was at when I was their age and where my wife was at. And you just imagine where they will be when they're 37 years old. And again, real quickly here, if you want something different on planet Earth, you're going to have to do something different on planet Earth. Okay, so that also means that you're going to have to make tough choices that everyone else may look at you and frown and say, why are you not vaccinating? Why are you not cutting pieces of your son's penis off like everyone else? Okay, why aren't you doing that? Why don't you have if that's what it takes, because you got to do something different if you're going to change the nature of the reality that we're experiencing collectively here on planet Earth. And it just takes courage. It also takes a positive male-female relationship where you both know that you got your back. That's why you can't be spending time arguing, because you guys have to have each other's back. Understand that the true war is not amongst each other as men and woman, as husband and wife. The true war is that when you make the appropriate choices as to how you're going to live your life, when you make the appropriate choices as to how you're going to conceive and raise your children, how you're going to care for them, educate them, how you're going to treat them, so forth, that's when the real war begins. It's not between you and your family. It's between you and the system.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So you got to be on the same page, and you can't be spending time arguing, fussing, and fighting with each other, because that energy, you're going to need that energy as you deal with the system that wants you to cut pieces of your son's penis off, that wants you to vaccinate your child to compromise their immune system at an early age, that wants you to put them in a public education system where they'll be, you know, basically controlled and educated by external forces as opposed to being educated by that which created them, the mother and the father. They'll be cared for by something external of their creator. They will be fed by something external of that which created them, their mother and their father. That's what the whole system is designed. It's designed to destabilize the family unit and to break the family unit up from the beginning. And it is broken up from the beginning, ladies and gentlemen, from when we cut pieces of our children's penises off, when we have these children inside inside the hospitals, when we put our children in the public education system. That is breaking up the family institution. If you want something different on planet Earth, you're going to have to do something different on planet Earth.
Man, I mean, that's so well said, and I completely agree about the patterns repeating. You know, you see your dad come home from a job he hates for your entire life and just have a beer and watch The Tonight Show and repeat the pattern while he hates his life and he wants something good for you, but he's sending you to public school, and you end up getting a job and going to college and doing the same damn thing. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, like me, want to do something different, but it's just so hard when the only examples we've seen are bad or shit examples. So, you know, then you have to take the real risk. It seems like a risk to not vaccinate your kids. And it's just like, you know, you don't want something bad to happen. I might want to have a birth at home, but what if that umbilical cord's wrapped around the head and you know, that guilt, I don't know that I could ever deal with that. Like, it's tough when you're going against the grain to really know. You're kind of just in the dark on what to really do.
Yeah, well, you got to have courage. And you know, for instance, like we've had that experience with one of our children with the umbilical cord, but that's not a big deal. You just unwrap the umbilical cord. Okay.
Yo-yo.
Yeah. I mean, it's in the umbilical cord. I mean, it's not like it's a cord, like a, you know, this or a chain, you know, it's, you know, you can move it. Like you can actually stretch it out. That's what I'm saying. The part of it is that it's a lack of understanding, a lack of research. You got to research these things. I'm not saying, look, people don't just do what we do. My wife, like, you better research first. Okay. Get the information and then decide. Okay. Don't decide because, you know, they're doing it. We're going to do it too. No. We decided to do it, but we researched first. Okay. We researched it and we have packs of information, and so we were fortified. And it's not complex, it's not difficult in terms of birthing. Okay, well, when I say that, I'm just talking about the process, understanding the process, three stages of labor. Okay, there's work involved, of course. The woman does most of the work, but what I'm getting at is that It's an issue of education. It's an issue of empowering yourself with the information that you need to whatever capacity it may be, whether you're going to vaccinate or what have you. None of our children have been vaccinated. We haven't had any problems. They're healthier than matter of fact, they're healthier than all of the children that I've ever come across with, which is most of the people that I've ever met who were vaccinated. Okay, why is it that my children never get sick and they've never been vaccinated, and yet children who've been vaccinated in the public education system are runny noses, ear infections, they're sick all the time, throwing up, so forth, sick all the time. We didn't have any of those issues. No vaccine. Vaccinations, ladies and gentlemen, it has nothing to do with uplifting your immune system. It has to do with compromising your immune system by hijacking it when it's in its infant stages and triggering it in a particular way to react as if you are in a state of disease, even though you're not in a state of disease. In other words, they give you the disease so that your body reacts to the disease when your immune system is in its infant stages. It compromises the infant. That's like telling a child, look, you need to run 4 miles and the baby just came up out of the womb, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Think about it. Okay, so the point being here, ladies and gentlemen, I know there's fear associated, but the fear is based upon a previous paradigm that made you fearful of the wrong thing. It made you fearful of your power to decide based upon what's in your child's best interest. And instead of being fearful of the fact that vaccinations compromise your child's immune system from the get-go, you say that that's what should be done, and I need to be fearful of the probability of me doing something different. Again, if you want something different, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to have to do something different. I'm going to say this too. Understand this, that this species, we are operating at a fraction of our power. And most of this power is taken from us very early on in life. That's why when we were children, we had those imaginations and we can imagine things and we were just having fun and it was so beautiful. The system is designed to take that imagination, take that creativity, take that internal genius. Y'all do realize that we're born geniuses. We are born, literally, that's why we learn languages so fast. That's why we learn things so fast, because we are a genius when we're born. We are, right by the time we get to the age of 36, we've been so programmed, myself included, to where we lose our genius, okay? And the system is designed to take the genius away from an early age. The point being is that, ladies and gentlemen, as a species, we are operating at a fraction of our power. And the question becomes, why is that the case? Well, the reason why is because the system is designed to take away our internal genius that we come to the planet with. So when I see my children and their progressions, brother, I look at them and I look at myself and I say, oh, my goodness, I was so mind controlled. And here I am at the age of 37, whatever degree of intellectual process, well-spoken, what have you, different insights that may be considered to be quite complex, what have you. There are people who would say, if they sat down with me, they would say, this dude is a genius. Well, what does that mean? Because I was a genius when I came to the planet. So what that means is that it took me all these years to get back to that point. What does that say? That says that on some level I was manipulated. And that was being in a system that compromised my degree of intellectual process. It compromised and took away, for at least a degree, my internal genius. So what I'm saying is that if we want to do something different or we want to experience something different for future generations that transcends the system, we have to preserve the internal genius within our children. And that's not going to happen if we keep doing what we're doing as a species, because we're going to still get the same result. You keep doing the same thing, think you got to expect different results. That's insanity. No, if you want something different, you're going to have to do something different. And if we want to change, to turn the tide in terms of what's taking place, don't succumb to the fear and all the things we've been told to be fearful about. Look at the things that we're fearful about and master those things. If we're fearful about not vaccinating, you better get the information that you need to empower yourself. If you're fearful about home birthing, go research, empower yourself. You will find that when you face the fear, largely which is derived from a system that is put in, that puts the fear in place so that that stagnates us, denies us our internal genius, and puts us on path to where it doesn't, we get to the point, now we got to wait till we're 37 years old, we have a level of intellectual process. Understand, if you want something different, you're going to have to do something different. And in order to do something different, you're going to have to face the fears and recognize that ultimately, in most cases, I should say, that which we fear is actually our own true power. It's just an issue of realizing that power, coming to a level of understanding of it. And then we get to the point where we say, you know what? The most natural thing for a man to do on planet Earth is to participate in the birth of his own child. Think about it, ladies and gentlemen. You know, you man enough to put your penis inside a vagina and create the child, but you're not man enough to deliver your child. How do we get to, that's emasculating. How did we get to that point? Well, we got to that point because there's a level of internal genius that has been taken away from men, a level of masculinity, a level of responsibility has been taken away from men, to where we believe that it's okay now to have some other man who we don't know. In between your wife's legs.
Yeah, fuck that.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, you should think about that differently, people.
I know. Think about it. I don't care if he's a doctor. I don't care. In between your own wife's legs. And not only that, he's bringing your child into the world. And the first hands that touch your child is some other dude's hand. Look, ladies and gentlemen.
Externalizing power.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. This system is ingenious, ladies and gentlemen. Then we wonder why we operate at a fraction of our capacity as a human species. It's those types of things. So my point being is, look, don't run. It don't mean that you have to give birth to your own child. I'm not saying that. It's a personal choice. It's based upon your situation and circumstances. Because people's situation and circumstances is different. It depends on where you live. It depends on economic situation, what have you. And it also depends on the level of courage that you have as a man. Okay? So I'm not saying men go out there and do this, because I can't give medical advice. What I'm saying is you should at least have the balls to research and to consider it as a possibility. That's what I'm saying. And see, even in just considering it as a possibility, it becomes realized in your mind. And if you can consider it as a possibility and it becomes realized in your mind, but you decide, okay, I'm gonna do it at a birthing center, I'm gonna do it at a hospital, that's okay, brother. What I'm saying is, when your son comes of age, you give him that option and you teach him that option. So that when he comes to the age of 27, 37, 47, he's not in a state where he's fearful, because he said, well, daddy already told me about that. You see what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
So in other words, we empower the next generation so that they can make a more adequate choice where it's not so much fear. They're coming from a place where, look, my daddy already told me about this. You see what I'm saying? So that's where I'm coming from on these types of issues. I'm not saying people do what I've done. What I'm saying is, get to the point to where you begin to at least consider doing something different than what the system demands. Because the reason why the species is where we're at, where we're externalizing power to such a degree, is because a system has created a dynamic within us to where we are always externalizing power. And I'm going to tell it for you men out there, if you're externalizing your power to Barack Obama, you're externalizing your power to Saddam Hussein, you're externalizing your power to the government, you're externalizing your power to the Illuminati, you're externalizing your power to reptilian shapeshifters, you're externalizing your power to Freemasons, your masculinity, bro, has been compromised. Okay, so what I'm saying is, ultimately, you got to reclaim your power and don't be fearful of any of that, including the possibility of you actually delivering your own child.
Man, that's well said, dude. Very
eye-opening. Don't get me started, brother. You know, don't get me started.
Very refreshing, man. That must be fascinating to see with your kids. I commend your courage. That is awesome. But it is about that time, man. I've had a blast talking to you. You've definitely given some great insights in a lot of areas. I hope we've given people something to think about. Before we go, you want to give people some of your web addresses so they can comb through your mountains of material?
Sure thing. Thank you so much, brother, for having me. I really enjoy myself, too. I do a lot of interviews, but I really enjoyed this one. So thank you so much. And if anyone, you want to check out my work, I deal with a lot of topics. You can go to linenhonorfilms.com. That's where all of my documentary work. That's where I talk about the system itself in terms of how it's set up and the different degrees of manipulation, you know, mass media, you know, mind control apparatus, so forth and so on. That's at linenhonorfilms.com, LENHONORFILMS.com. My current website, my main website, is linenhonor.com, and we have live video streams there, radio shows. I have books there. My book, The 9-1 Fear-Based Mind Control Program, is there as well. My wife, she has a cookbook. It's a vegan cookbook, a vegan, vegetarian, and raw cookbook if you're interested in eating healthier foods. We also have live video streams where we do positive relationships. So we talk about male-female relationships, how to establish them, how to be prepared for them, how to raise children, you know, homeschooling, homeboating, all that kind of stuff. So we do live video streams there. I also have a YouTube page, and I've been uploading there more. And my YouTube page is Linen Honor, or you can look for Linen Honor Films on YouTube. And I encourage people to check out my work. Again, I'm going to say this, you know, because sometimes I talk about things and it may be overwhelming to people. Look, take your life one day at a time and just take your life one day at a time and just look at one thing and say, OK, what area can I improve in and how do I improve in that? And what you'll find is that if you commit to that day by day, your levels of awareness will begin to expand. And it's not based upon what I say or what my dear brother here has to say or what anyone else has to say, but it has to do with your own personal realization. And that's where the true power comes from. You know, my understanding in terms of being a man and functioning to the capacity, not that I'm perfect, because I got a whole lot more stuff to work on. My wife, she'll tell you that. But to get to this level, it wasn't because I saw a video on YouTube. It wasn't because I listened to a radio show, you know, where Lynn and Honor was talking. No. It was because I made a commitment to refining myself as a man every single day. And I wanted to be in better service to my wife, better service to my children, and better service to everyone else on the planet. So what I'm saying is that individuals, take it one day at a time, make a commitment to refining yourself to whatever degree is necessary that you feel is necessary in your life. And what you'll find is that your life will continue to unfold, and you will continue to experience much, much more awareness, much, much higher degrees of awareness. And that's when you begin to experience a level of happiness and joy that you may not have been able to experience before. And that's what it's all about, getting to that point where you transcend this matrix of fear, death, and destruction, and you begin to realize that there is a lot of positive things taking place on the planet, including this wonderful radio show, brother. Thank you so much.
Boom. Excellent, man. Great advice. Really enjoyed it. Hope we can do it again sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime, brother. Anytime.
All right, man. Take care. Enjoy the day.
Yeah, you too. Peace.
There you have it, guys. Another episode of the Higher Side Chats. I'm Greg Carlwood. That was Lennon Honor. Thanks for listening. You've all been awesome. I appreciate all the great messages. Please share the show with your people, or donate a couple of bucks, or buy a t-shirt. Or don't do anything except continuing to listen and sticking with me on this wild, crazy, hazy ride. I'm fucking out of here. In a torn up town, no postcode. But every song's like gold teeth, gray goose dripping in the bathroom, bloodstains, ball gowns, trash in the hotel room. We don't care. We're driving Cadillacs in our dreams. But everybody's like crystal, Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece, jet planes, islands, tigers on a gold leash. We don't care. We aren't caught up in your love affair, and we'll never be royal. We crave a different kind of buzz. Let me be your ruler. You can call me Queen Bee. And baby, I'll rule. Let me live that fantasy. My friends and I, we've cracked the code. We count our dollars on the train to the party. And everyone who knows us knows that we're fine with this. We didn't come for money. But every song's like gold teeth, gray goose dripping in the bathroom, bloodstains, ball gowns, trash in the hotel room. We don't care. We're driving Cadillacs in our dreams. But everybody's like crystal, Maybach, diamonds on your timepiece, jet planes, islands, tigers on a gold. We aren't caught up in your love affair, and we'll never be royals. It's a run in our blood. That kind of luck's just ain't for us. We crave a different kind of buzz. Let me be your ruler. You can call me Queen Bee. And baby, I'll rule. Let me live that fantasy. Crave a different kind of buzz. Let me be